come off the other side. Go to the right. Brian Creel. How are y'all doing?
How are you doing, Brian?
Real well.
All right, today's date is February 11th, 2019. Time is now 11:06 PM. Good to order the quarterly meeting of the Cal Police Officers Retirement System Board of Trustees meeting. For purposes of the recording, this meeting was posted on the 31st of January at 4:46 PM. For purposes of the recording, we'll start to my right and have everybody state the name and position for the record.
Brian Creel, board member.
Steve Covey, secretary.
Added board member.
Larry Cole, investment consultant.
Lee Deaner, attorney.
Jessica Peller, pensions coordinator.
Alicia Baker. Cindy Stewart, board member.
Dale Adams, planning administrator.
And as stated, I'm Michael Summer, and I'm the attorney. First meeting item on the agenda is review of the minutes of the prior meeting. Did everybody receive minutes? Do I have a motion to review them, or does it need to be any discussion, corrections, et cetera?
Make a motion.
And do we have a second?
Okay, I'll send it out.
Any discussion? All in favor of approval of the minutes of the previous meeting?
Aye.
All right, next item is a discussion on the assumed rate of return.
That was really carryover from the last meeting. We had some discussion on that. Steve had brought it up, something I think that he had heard at the conference, something he said in the fall. Our current rate of return is assumed at 7.75. Went down October 1st from 7.85. And we're not under any kind of pressure from the state like we were last time to change it. But we had a slight discussion that was mentioned in these meetings, these minutes, and we just said we'll continue the discussion today.
I have the paper that you handed out from the last, and I think you can see it's like a professor. I'm going to agree with it. I created the essay. And here's the bottom line is that most of the capital market forecasts are saying that we're not going to see the kind of returns we've seen in the last 20 or 30 years. What those are based on is really not very reliable. Those forecasts, as I think I said in the last meeting, I've been watching those forecasts for, I've been in the business 40 years, so let's say I've been watching them close for 25 years as a consultant for 25 years, and as I've looked at those and watched them over the years, the one thing consistent is they're never accurate. So you won't find anybody that, you know, 5 years ago said the equity market's going to give you double-digit returns. You know, it's always kind of a more conservative, it seems to me, estimate going forward. So I don't know how reliable it is, I guess, is the bottom line. Are we seeing global slowdown? Yes. My complaint about those forecasts, one of my biggest complaints about those forecasts is that they are, even though they're long-term forecasts, I would say they're way too heavily influenced by short-term conditions. You know, they can't see beyond the next 2 years or 3 years or even 4 years and say that, how can we say you're not going to see double-digit equity returns 10 years down the road? Yeah, there is global slowdown right now, so that's influencing a lot of these forecasts. So you see economic slowdown, which doesn't necessarily, by the way, translate into worse equity returns. Equity is driven by earnings, and so there may be adjustments for that. So all that said, the consensus certainly is out there that things are probably going to be slower. I took exception to a lot of the things that are sitting here that just kind of are passed over, I guess. Like it says, expected asset performance over the next 30 years is expected to be weaker than the past. Doesn't say where they got that information or who says that. There's several forecasts in here where they're saying like an absolute, when it's nothing more than a long-range forecast. There's no basis for it, at least not a historical basis for some. So if I think this discussion might be better had at a time when both the actuary and I'm here.
because if there is a, if somebody else is going on in the actuarial assumptions that could offset the costs of lowering the assumed rate, then maybe it would be okay to go ahead and start inching it down just a little bit to just improve the probability that we make the assumption. So if you go from 7.75 down to 7.5 over a 2 or 3 year period, it's less impact on the funding cost. And if there's something else in the actuarial assumptions that maybe offsets that, because the lower you go in the rate, the assumed rate, that's a big impact on the contribution. So it'll cost more in the short run to fund the lower assumption.
Phil, do you remember, for somebody that I'm drawing completely, when we did the last change where we went from, and just the lending, for lending history, we were at 8.5% for a long, long time. Then the state came in and said, and this is what we eventually rolled it down, said, we want you to go to 8 because that's more where the median is and where we want to see people. And we said, why? Well, actually, he asked why on the conference call, and the state actuarially said, because I said so. So we had to go from 8.5 to 8. The trend has been to bump it down. I think the state just went down to what, 7.4? And FRS has always been the gauge that everybody looks at. So we came down over 2 years from 8 to 7.4. Where we're at is 7.75 now, and what we're looking at is, do we step that again? But what I can't remember is, what was the percentage of payroll cost that it cost to do those two steps? But I remember it wasn't a very lot.
When it got reduced?
When we went
from 8 to 7.85 and 7.7.
Yeah. Do you remember what it was each time?
Mike, I've heard Doug say the rule of thumb is if you reduce your investment return assumption 8%, it increases your payroll 10%, or the funding requirement 10%. That's rule of thumb.
Yeah, because I remember when we did it, it was offset by the experience study and a lot of that stuff. There was no net gain for the city, so to speak, how much their funding requirement was. And that's one of the reasons we did it, because we did an experience study and saved several percent because we saw things that were out of kilter assumption wise, like, you know, assuming that 10% of your workforce is going to become disabled. Now, doesn't matter. You know, so there was an offset there. Right now, I don't know if we're at an offset point. I would agree with Larry that this does want to be in the next meeting for evaluation.
Get on the evaluation, maybe.
I would think that would be definitely the best time.
I was actually going to be impressed that Doug made me speaking on the phone with this being because it's going to be the next one.
So I'm not opposed to lowering it, yeah, and I think that's would be the best time to have a discussion, but just there was another, just to give you an example of what we're looking at, Chris says, overall, the conference principals expressed concern about the downward pressure on market assets. At the time that was written, your five-year return was 8%, equities had returned 10% a year for the last 5 years, so I'm not sure where that statement comes from, but yet it's in there like a fact. In a way, you know, from what they present to people. And so I'm not sure. At one time, the reason I was so against lowering the rates was that I felt, I'm still pretty certain, that a lot of the pressure to lower your rates was politically driven to drive pension funds, defined benefit funds, out of business. Lower the rate, increase the cost, you can't afford the plan anymore, we'll all go to DC plans, defined contribution plans. I'm not seeing that kind of pressure, and Lee may have even more background. I'm not feeling that kind of political pressure as much as we did then. And after this last quarter, you know, which is very short term, you know, they're going to have some numbers to back up some of these statements that they didn't have when they made these statements. So I don't know if that pressure will increase again or not. But if you can lower it without having an extreme cost to the plan, or, you know, have something to offset it, you know, obviously it increases the probability that we can make that assumption rate. But if you lower it too much and the plan expenses go up,
you'll never see any benefit, you'll never see a new officer hired, and, you know, that's those kind of things, so it's a trade-off.
And they passed legislation to increase the administrative expenses.
Yeah.
If they required Doug as the actuary to do additional calculations, what he provides in the issue.
So, I'll sum it up. 7.75 to me is still very reasonable expectation. If there's an opportunity to lower the rate a little bit at a time without significantly increasing the cost due to other offsets, then I would back it. But let's talk to Doug about that.
So I believe that handout we had, I think the median would be 7.65 now, statewide?
I think that's where FRS is right now.
FRS went down.
Would be 7.44.
They've always been on the low end.
I've seen that 7.65 number somewhere too.
I thought I remembered that from something that came out that had every pension plan in the state on it. I want to say the median was either 7.65 or 7.7.
It's a false report.
That was like a year old, right?
It's 27.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the actuaries have come out, I've said in a lot of meetings where the actuaries have said same thing here, you know, assumption rate, capital markets or forecasts are all lower, and they're getting that same information that I've seen for the last 4 years. It's never accurate, but it's kind of, it's always kind of baffled me, kind of repeating myself to a lot of people, but it's baffled me that very expensive decisions are being made based on forecasts that I can show you have never been accurate. And that's always bothered me from expense.
I just don't fall into what we had happened the last time. Because the last time the budget had already been done and we had to come to the city after the budget had been adopted and say, okay, we need another million too.
Well, even if we lose.
When we got the ultimatum one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one was a little bit. Yeah, they just so you know, at that time they were 8.5% assumption. The state was arguing that we should go to 8. And they kept arguing. Finally, I said on the phone, I said, well, and kept referring to the 3 and 5 year number. And I finally said, at that particular point in time, I said, well, the 3 year and 5 year numbers are no longer 8% either. Why is that okay? And that's what he said, basically, shut up. Yeah, this is what we're going to do. So we got the message quite loud and clear at that time. So, anyway, I'm not quite as adamant about it as I used to be. But if you have an opportunity to lower some, that's great. If you don't.
So this is just a discussion that was on the table until we got the actuary here?
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I brought it up, and it was something that I gathered from the conference for discussion. I didn't know whether it was necessary.
Was that Ash talking, Ash Williams?
I believe so.
Ash is the administrator, I guess, for FRS. And everybody tends to accept his word as gospel.
Unless I tell.
He doesn't say because I said so. He has other people that say because I said so for him. Well, and everybody tends to listen to that because FRS is a good pension plan.
Yeah. And things can change so quickly, you know, because you're going to see the numbers on 1231. You know, like the 3 year equity numbers now are like 8% a year. Just as recently as this report on 9/30, the 3 year number was 12% per year. Then I ran the equity numbers trailing 3 years on January 26th. I've been for another client. I ran it for January 26th, and the 3 year number was back up to 12%. So that means that there was a 4 week drop off where the market beginning would drop, and then it was replaced by a strong equity market that we had this year. So that's how fast it can change. And that's why I think that they need to do a better job of focusing on longer term returns. Now, they did have in that piece 20 year returns for the FRS plan was for 6.34.
About
6.34. 15 year was 7.86. 5 year was 8.69. So, and again, depends on what time period you want to pick out to decide what you think the long term may want to do.
The things that they never mentioned at the conference, when Ash is talking, they always hand out the numbers to show how well funded FRS is. What they never talk about is FRS is funded well and the legislature funds that. If you recall, several years ago, they said, we're going to catch them up, we're going to fund them. They called them up, FRS at one time had 118% of what it needed. And they didn't fund it for 2 years, and then they go back down to about 86-85%, somewhere in there. So everybody points to FRS as the benchmark, but it's the same as any other pension plan. If the government entity doesn't fund it properly, it doesn't matter what the performance is, it's not going to be there, and that's what the state of Florida has been doing with FRS, but they never talk about that. The good thing is, the city has always never not funded us like they should, at least not for
when you see a lot of articles too, the rep of California and Illinois and some of the report performance, you did exactly what you're talking about.
They didn't fund it for 5 years.
And they didn't have to legally. Some of those states did not have the legal obligation because they were in Florida. So if you ever see anything where they're trying to paint the Florida plan with the same brush, just immediately put the radar out because that's.
Statute restricted the finding requirements, right. And a lot of states do so. I think we will end up being another.
I know he's going to have evaluation for the dollar also part of the budget. I don't know what I have this discussion in name also.
We shouldn't be another Illinois.
All right, so we'll
table
that now. Alright, public input and comment. Alright, that's all.
You really want to go there, huh?
We have to.
This is a really bad timing for me to come to your first meeting.
I wouldn't expect anything.
We did have the worst quarter we've had in 10 years. Maybe even more than that, actually, for one quarter. So it was a pretty ugly quarter, and that's the quarter we're going to review. Now, as I'm reviewing this, just to keep everybody a little bit calm, since the first of the year, I would estimate the plan is up about between 5 and 6% total plan. Equities are up pretty strong since January 1. I backed off a little bit here last couple of 30 days, but up pretty strong still. So we got a pretty good quarter going right now, but we haven't made up the losses yet from the last quarter. And that last quarter is the first quarter of your fiscal year. So we dug a hole that we've got to try to dig out for the next 9 months. So take a look at page, I usually skip the first page, the perspective, but there is one stat in there I was going to cover with you on page one. And that is in that second paragraph, I talk about volatility. We had swings of plus or minus 9% 9 times. In trading days in the month of in December alone. That's how volatile it got during the downturn. And there you go with the perspective, 2017, the entire year just saw 8 years of that. So in 1 month, we saw a year's worth of volatility in terms of plus or minus 9%. So, and a whole lot of that happened, as I said in that paragraph, in the last hour of trading, which is a lot of program trading. It's a lot of ETFs. There's a lot of program trading that kicks in for various reasons. Could be interest rate driven, Fed driven. Could be just the market itself or get certain triggers in program trading. But it was happening so fast that it could not have possibly been you and me picking up the phone and calling a broker. There's no way. Or going online and doing some trading. You just can't do it. So it has to be program trading. So that becomes a very difficult market to manage your money in, quite frankly. And we saw it. Kind of saw the worst of it during that period of time. So the volatility index picked up. Page two is this is not plan specific, this is the market in general, but if you look at the top there, it shows you that really, once you make places to hide, anything with equities was negative. You see the S&P 500 down 13.5% for the quarter, the Russell 2000, which is the small cap index. So smaller companies were down 20%. The reds are bonds. You did have some bonds that were slightly positive for the quarter. Everything else was down pretty big. Even on that same page on the bottom right, particularly if you were invested in energy, you got
you got hit hard. If you had a big energy bet there, then energy sector was down 23.8%. That's the third one in, the lowest performer there. So everything down, as you can tell, it was just an ugly place to be. Utilities were the only thing that kind of squeezed out a little bit. For the quarter, you also had the bond market there on page three. That got, as I said, some bonds were actually up in the period. So interest rates did not really rise during the period. The Fed decided to hold off in December. Even the Fed has done a lot of interest rate increases during the last year, but it hasn't really had an impact on the intermediate and long-term interest rates, which are more driven by the market. So you've had what they call a flattening of the yield curve. So short-term rates go up and then the long-term kind of stay the same. So you really don't get rewarded for taking a lot of risk in the bond market. If we flip over, I'm going to skip a few pages. Lenny, for your information, we'll do a summary on page four. By the way, I'm looking up and we're looking down because I got an extra page in there. And then the next few pages, pages five, six, and seven, are summaries right out of the investment policy statement that I'll kind of touch on each manager. One of the important sections, not all important, but one of the more important sections is the last one on page seven. That last grouping is, if anything was marked no there, we'd have to fix it. That everything was in compliance. We didn't have any compliance issues going forward. So everything seems to be in compliance with the investment policy.
I don't think anything switched on the first.
Yeah, oh yeah, we got to switch that to 775. Yeah, I made a note of that already on here. It's 7-7. I put it on the front of my notes, so we should get that done. Apologize if we didn't get done this time, because I had it written down, but I guess I didn't pass the word on. The performance starts on page 8, and it was a very difficult quarter, lost about $6.6 million. Down 9%. The benchmark was down 8.5, so a little bit more than the benchmark. The one-year number, again, kind of in line. I would have expected that. A little disappointing in the quarter. I thought we would have held up a little bit better, but the reason we didn't, it's not necessarily the managers as much as it was the asset allocation. You remember we went into the quarter a little overweighted in stocks. I let that run for several, actually 2 or 3 years, let it run up a little bit. And the time to pay the price. We didn't pay for that for several quarters, but then that overweight in equities kind of hurt us relative to the benchmark itself. So that's what hurt us then. And you can see going across the page the impact that 1.25 had, really lowering those overall returns now for the 5 year. As we go to page 9, that was the asset allocation. Again, I'm not going to rebalance on this volatile market. We're still going to stay underweighted in the MLPs. They got hammered this quarter. But they're also coming back strong this quarter. So that's been that wild ride we've talked about, just buckle up and hang on. And again, what's happened in that space, these are pipelines and storage facilities for American oil and natural gas. So kind of a play on the energy boom in the U.S. So you don't own the commodity. You don't own the gas, you don't own the oil, but you own the coal road, you own the pipeline and the storage facility. So if it's coming out of the ground, it's got to go through that pipeline. That's where you should get paid. They've been extremely volatile for a lot of different reasons, but as far as the demand for those pipelines, it's going up. The Venezuelan crisis is actually aiming to increase that more. We're producing more oil than Saudi Arabia right now. We're exporting already natural gas. We're already a big exporter of natural gas. We're starting to export oil. So there's a demand for these pipelines that should be improving, and now they're up 10 to 12% from the first of the year. So it's just a huge, wild ride. But I got to believe the American energy story is still pretty intact.
That's correct. Plus, pumping out more oil within this country, that's because of the philosophy of the administration. So if it was
It actually kind of started this administration has certainly helped it in terms of regulations. They've taken off a lot of regulations and are encouraging it. You probably saw a little bit more resistance during the Obama administration, but at the same time, things were improving even then as far as our demand or our supply. And really, most of it's due to the technology. The fracking technology is controversial, but still is producing a lot of oil, and they're getting a lot of oil. And natural gas has just been cheap. We got a lot of it, especially up in the Northeast, and we're shipping it out. So it's selling pretty cheap. but it's got to go through the budget, so you should be getting paid for it. And so maybe a little bit of the, of this administration, a lot of us geopolitically know it's, we don't have any influence, well, shouldn't say that. The Venezuelan crisis is separate from both the administration, and that's a lot of oil that's not coming to the market. So that's why I think we made up somewhere. Specifically us. The Saudis are pumping near capacity. They don't have quite the influence that they used to have. You know, that OPEC doesn't have the influence that it used to have necessarily. They still have a lot of influence. They're certainly not relying upon that for their own use. So it's a really changing industry, and we're still in the middle of the morning for that change. I think that's some of it is stay patient for the most. Right up the volatility. It's not a lot of your portfolio, it's less than 3%. That's what I've been saying for a while. Dale's up to us on that. It's just been a lot more volatile than we expected. Well, look at the asset class, but right now you're not too far off the target for everything we've got in here. Bonds are still not very attractive, so it's not like I want to take money off the equities and move into bonds. If we do that, well, we'd better be talking about lowering your assumption rate, because the bonds are still only paying 2-3% for the most part. Your portfolio is on page 10. I'll talk about the managers here in just a second. Let's skip over to page 12. This is looking at performance in a little different way. And again, Lenny, I don't know if you've seen these reports, but the total fund return, this is gross of fees, so this is before fees are taken out, was 8.8% for the quarter. That ranked a little bit below average. Average would have been the 50th percentile. So whereas for a quarter, we were slightly below average relative to other public pension funds around the country. The main reason for that is we were a little bit overweighted in equities relative to other pension funds in the country. That one-year number, even though it's minus 3.5%, is slightly ahead of the benchmark on a gross return basis and ranked almost in the top third, so 34th percentile. The three-year number ranks above average, slightly above our benchmark, and the five-year number also ranked in top 39% relative to, again, to other public pension funds. So, difficult quarter, but obviously you've been rewarded for some of the risk that you've taken in the last few years in terms of a little bit of overweighting. Very well-diversified portfolio. Westwood slightly beat their benchmark, and if you can believe it, a minus 11.4% quarter ranked in the top 24% of their peer group. So it was a pretty good look here, Sawgrass, same thing, minus 10.3, they clobbered their benchmark. So, you know, we had a little bit of concern about Sawgrass, and we said in many meetings prior to this, wait for a down market. They typically protect you well in down markets. If they don't, we got an issue. Well, they did. And so they protected very well relative to their bogey there. And that put them in the top 8%. And that brought their one-year number then. They were positive for the year. And we didn't see a lot of positive returns on the equity. They actually made a little money for the year, ranked in the top 14%. Frontier, difficult quarter, down 21%. That's an understatement, I guess. Difficult quarter, down 21%. That was in the bottom 17% of their peer group. They're still about average for the 1 year, and a little below average for 3 years, but still above average and above their benchmark for the 5 year period. So, those, both of your small cap, and I'll I have to go to another page to show you the river, but both of those are going to be a little more volatile, typically. So hopefully they offset each other a little bit, but they're both going to be a little bit volatile. Here's the MLP, down 15.7%. That now put them down 11.1% for the calendar year. But again, they're up about between 10 and 11%. Equest was up between 10 and 11% year-to-date from yesterday. So, convertibles, you know, they were down 10%, but relative to stocks, they did pretty good. You know, if you remember, the long-term profile for the convertible asset class, I expect, is that they will probably get you about 70 to 80% of the upside of the equity markets, but only about 50 to 60% of the downside over the long term. So it's kind of a chicken and egg for the stock market. They're convertible bonds. They're bonds that are actually convertible into shares of common stock. So if the market gets too crazy, they sort of trade like a bond. And they're just some downside protection. So in this case, they were down 10. The overall market, where growth was down 15, value was down 11, the small and mid caps were down even more, between 15-20%. And that's kind of where convertibles would fall into, like, mid cap space. So they were down 10 versus about 15-18%, let's say, for their underlying stocks. So it gives us, it's supposed to be, believe it or not, you know, down 10%. Been a good long term asset class. The international was down about the same as our domestic, down 12.5%. And the hero of the was private real estate. You got 1.8% for the quarter and 7.9% for the year. So that's commercial real estate. You have American Core was at 1.9, UBS up 1.7. You know, UBS you've had for quite a while. They're underperforming a little bit relative to that benchmark. I did contact them and asked them to go attend a May meeting. So right now they've confirmed that they can attend a May meeting. We'll talk about their performance a little bit. They're less levered than the other their peers, and there's about 30-some managers in that index. And they don't have as much leverage and don't borrow as much money, which I think would normally help them in a down period. They really didn't have a down period. The markets were down, but not theirs. As you can see, they were still up about 1.7%. They were in line with the benchmark for the quarter, but they struggled a little bit to keep up longer term. And I think they mentioned them last quarter, and so I just asked if they could come to the main meeting and just give us an update on how they're struggling a little bit relative to that. It's not a lot, but it's a little bit of a concern. And then the bond manager, Sawgrass, was up 1.2% for the quarter. They had real estate and bonds were positive for the quarter. Everything else got was pretty good. And by the way, don't be too alarmed by that 100 percentile number on a 5-year, 2.2%. I looked at that and had to do a little research because they were beating the benchmark by 30 basis points, which in the bond world is a pretty big number in today's it's a full return. But they ranked in the bottom 1%, basically the bottom position we get. And the reason is that that range is so tight. A 2.4% return. I had a client with a 2.4% return last week, and a 2.4% return was something like the 40th percentile. So it's just a cash flow basis point, you know, so there's nothing to get too concerned about that. And they had a good year, by the way. 0.9% was in the top 10%. Hood River, the mutual funds are on the next page, so anything that's a mutual fund will show the rankings on page 14. Hood River had a rough quarter, but still had a decent year. Keep the benchmark pretty substantially in the top 37%. And Euro Pacific just keeps clicking along pretty consistently. So no changes, no recommendations for any managers to shift around. We're just kind of have our UBS and maybe give us a little bit of an update. This is probably getting two numbers nerdy for you, but I think I'll go over there anyway for a second. Page 18, just to show you that standard deviation column on the right-hand side, that three-year number is 6.7%, just to show you how fast that can change. That same number last report I gave to you was 2.51. So the volatility has increased substantially because of one extremely volatile quarter. So that can also go the other way. But diversification has helped you over the long time ago. So we're good managers and well diversified. And then page 19, we finally have another bar going below the zero line there. So hopefully we can get that moved up before the fiscal year is over. And the last chart I'll cover is on page 20. So even with kind of a difficult news this quarter, remind you to kind of keep focused on the long term. And on that top left hand side, these are rolling 5-year numbers. So every quarter we look back 5 years and say, how did the plan do? How did it rank relative to its peer group? So that's 10 years worth of data. And it says that 55% of the time this plan is still in the top quartile for those rolling 5-year periods. 45% of the time it's in the second quartile. So 100% of the time you're ranking above average still in your rolling 5-year over the last 5 years, which is 10 years again worth of data. So pretty consistent returns. We had a rough stretch there with one of our managers not too long ago and replaced them. And so we've holding up pretty well. Probably pulled the word out. Any questions? Having EBS in is your fault. I just went ahead and confirmed that they could make it that day, so if we'd like to have them in, it's probably been a while since we've had a real estate update.
On a question, on a related topic, we've got some expenses and three people who will be leaving the drop in March, April, May. And we're going to need to have about $2.1 million.
About how much?
$2.1 million.
Is that just for the drop, or is that for the landing?
That's the number you gave. And the drop's not quite that high, but...
$2.1 million for four of the next week?
That's the coverage.
There you go. Reduction.
I think it's actually the end of March.
Down to...
Yeah, one of them leaves in March, one of them leaves in April, the other one leaves in May, plus...
Well, in the past, I think the board has given me authority to work the day on the recommendations to get a little closer to those dates, rather than make a call and have a room or four, and it's like, as always, as much as art.
And I don't know if we need to raise the whole 2.1 million in this part of it, because one goes in April, one goes in March, one goes in April.
I normally start at 7.
So we need some for expenses.
We have enough through March.
I'm showing $438,000 in there as of yesterday, in cash.
And it just got right to some of the expenses for the month. I think I timed it to where it was almost all gone at the end of the quarter. And then we would draw for the next 3 months. But that's up to you, I mean, I can get month.
Well,
is that why it shows we're holding so much cash in the report?
We're getting it.
$689,000, but we had some, we just paid out, and we had raised some, so. I mean, if you can do it monthly, again, as volatile as these markets have been, I'd probably rather just get the request, say, hey, we need this in the next 2 weeks, send it out to the manager, send it to you, saying this is where I think we ought to get it from, and then notify the manager. I hate to make a decision today that we're going to pull it out of equities, and then watch the equity market correct 20% or something in the next 2 weeks. Be what I want to be buying in, not running away.
Yeah, and it's an adjustment because they gave us all the money up front for the contribution. Usually, you'll see the expenses. What they give us is what we use for the expenses for that year, so.
Yeah, we took that money and we invested it. I mean, you gave us a recommendation, kind of spread it around pretty well.
So we need a motion to allow the two of you to figure out where you're going to come closer to the date.
You know, a couple months notice and let the manager have some time.
But because the first one, the drop money is $382,000, basically. The next one after that is $356,000. So those two together are going to take us to the end of April. That's a little less than $1 million. And then we got some expenses that we need out of that, too.
Yeah, it runs about $400,000 people in
itself. Yeah. We could do it. We could probably do the $1.2 million and then do
$1.2 million by
March 5th, at the end of April, end of March. March, would that take care of that?
You've got enough to pay February expenses.
February's is paid.
Long as that's $438,000.
Right. Yeah, and once it's like February, this, that'll take up the 400. I don't know.
I'm not having enough to pay March. We'll need to do it probably the first week of March.
This, if you could just finalize the number, give me a number on it.
Yeah, we'll need a motion to round up to work that out, date wise and amount wise and where it comes from.
Okay, I'll make a motion to Dale and Larry in and around beginning of March, work on. Choose where to go.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All right, anything else? Want to move on?
I don't really know this.
All right, next,
I do want Larry to promise us a better report.
That's a pretty low bar. I'll almost do that. I'll almost do that. Yeah, I might have just.
Review and approve the administrative expenses itemization of investments in 2019, 20.
Wait, okay.
Nobody thought you were going to be here.
I got it.
You're ready for one, right? The program. Yep, we're trying to make them.
I've already seen them.
He verified them. Dusty. All right, so the first one is just a summary of the funds, expenses, and revenues. The next two pages are details of that summary. If you want to break into any specific category. Let's see, you'll see that we had 1.9 in revenues. That's an employee contribution, the city's contribution, the state contribution, your interest, dividends, and then your gains from the investments. The next little section there is the 5. Almost 9 million. It was what we paid out in pension benefits, whether it be the draw payments or every month, everybody's monthly benefit. The expenses that are listed here are what we are actually invoiced on. Some of the managers take their fee out before we get our statements. So that is in addition to these. This is just what we're invoiced on, and Dale and Lord use it, some of the other board signs for. We actually cut a check to them. The net income is almost 5 million. And then the very final page of that handout is the actual budget that we've done. You can see that for 2019, we have less expenses than last year, and that is due to less payout of the draw. Usually, every year we increase our retirees, disability, and benefit payments. For those that are added new or that may start this year. But the decrease in the draw is significant. As long as that money stays in the plan, as long as it's supposed to, not paying by that early, we should all hit our marks on all of these. The board will need to, by motion, approve both the budget and the expense. And we post this on the retiree corner of the lease portion of our website.
Make a motion, we accept those expenses and put those present.
Question? Money out of here, it's all right. All right, we have a motion, second.
Let me have to ground.
Any?
Sorry.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Next item on the agenda is, I guess, further information on the Milliman IT proposal, Mark, administration software at the city one?
Yes, the city was scheduled to come and speak to the board, as well as Milliman. I asked them to wait, because I found out that Foster and Foster has acquired software that evidently just like this, that has to be. I called to speak to Doug, about the Milliman one that product, and, he has told me that they have acquired a software company, and that he would have something for me for next week. When I called to speak to the NIHART, actually, about Milliman, they also informed me that they have software. So they are also putting together a proposal. So I have the three of them.
So they.
Sorry.
Consider paying.
I do have, IT support, I do have business manager support for the software. I know Jeff spoke to you guys before about it. I felt like there were some questions that didn't quite get answered last week.
We're not sure exactly what this is going to do for you to make the job easier for administration.
The biggest thing. And we get beat over the head with the expenses that were then, this one, it was for the expenses.
Well, the biggest thing is the retainage of pensionable wages. Each year, the city, about every 10 years, the city decides to upgrade their financial software. And they promise that the pensionable wages aren't going to go away, they're going to do. So it's hard to do calculations without proper pensionable wages. We do have instances where we use the choose, which is not the pensionable wages, but that's what we have to use. We can't determine if you had 4 weeks of family and no pay for those years, or workers' comp, to deduct those days and times and hours from your calculation. That's what makes it really hard, is pensionable wages. There's also supposed to be access to a website where employees can go and run their own calculations as many times as they want, different scenarios that they want.
That's provided in the software that they're going to provide.
That is provided in the software. There is a startup fee. The one quote that we have is $30,000. But we have almost 2,000 retirees that are either receiving benefits or sitting at the waiting to receive benefits. They haven't closed the recent fire plan, so that is still ongoing. You're always going to have, each person that comes in, you're going to have their calculations ability. I don't think this is to replace Foster and Foster. Back up. You do their final calculations. I don't think that this software is to replace that. I think my manager hands and the expert hands We need to be on the final.
So this will give the employee the opportunity to go on the website and form.
Yes.
They should do a.
Do what their contributions have been for however long they've been here. Do the calculation.
Will they use real-time numbers on the salary?
We would upload every 2 weeks the salaries from payroll into the system and they would retain this.
That would be the advantage, they have the accurate number instead of an estimated number?
Yes.
That's $50,000 drop calculators out there that you can use once you come up with an average.
Yes. With, your calculation hasn't gotten as cumbersome as fire in general. Again, with fire, they split it, so where there's tiers, some people get this, some people get this. In general, we have that one raised. And their software is supposed to incorporate all this. It's also supposed to retain, with police officers, the majority of them start out as a general employee and move over to an officer at a later date. Sometimes it's 2 weeks, sometimes it's almost a year before they move over. In the current system and systems past, we don't have any way to retain that information except for a hard document in their file. So if somebody comes in for an estimate, once you tell us, we don't go look for it because it's an estimate.
Just look at that.
Yes, it is supposed to have an Allison maintain all that information. We have the input in, of course, but it has a way, it has somewhere for us to input it. Right now, we have an accounts payable program that will pay invoices that we borrow from the city. And then we have a payroll system that pays retirees. Other than that, everything is kept on spreadsheets and or in that hard folder. And this is supposed to help eliminate all that. And I think it was like $4,000 a year for the maintenance fee. That's supposed to be split, hopefully by four, the city and the three boards. So $1,000 a year to have a system
that was
can
the
do this.
That was one of the questions we had last time. Like, it was, I think the total for the first year was going to be like $36,000. Is that the three boards, or is that the three boards and the city?
The three boards and the city.
So the city.
But there's nobody here from the city.
To say that they're going to actually kick it off.
Yes. But Winston has told me that she does have the support of the city manager. I have not heard
that. That's all well and good.
This is,
that's all well and good.
There's not a contract yet. And when she comes to the meeting, when we have this all ironed out a little bit, we will pass it out.
Because, I mean,
yes,
to my opinion,
that should be
done the same way as every other thing is done as far as the administration. We pay X percent based on the number of employees, general pays X percent, fire pays X percent,
and then
you throw the city.
You might just want to divide that out three or four ways. Just about everything.
Well, one thing I was going to bring this up. I think she's talking about the funding.
The general plan is closed.
They still have 700 versus 180.
Mm-hmm. But whatever.
But they're set up, they're in the system, the only thing we really have to do for them is if the multiplier changes, we have to go in and edit that, address changes, tax changes. There's nobody new coming in
to that plan.
This doesn't manage the 401k plan at all?
No, we do not. We don't have anything to do with the 401k at all.
How is that managed? Is that through a firm?
ICMA. When an employee starts, they enroll them, payroll or hope, enroll them into the VC plan with ICMA. They make the contributions. We don't even get totals or anything. Payroll will send us a report with this contribution for Doug. that's what we extended our 401. And that's just a suggestion going forward.
Is this the kind of administrative fee that they can extend?
The administrative agreement is due to come before the board in May. It's not in that agreement. I don't know if you want to add it to it or.
So where you became alive, you're saying the general pension only wants to pay a quarter of everything because their plan is closed, not by the number of employees, which has always been the yardstick of what we've used.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying they've got an argument now not to pay 75 to 80% of it. As fire and police are using 10 or 11%.
I think our last one was 13, I think fire was 11, but that's the way it's been. And it's gonna be by number of employees. It's always been by number.
By number of employees, it's shrinking to almost nothing.
Well, that changes as it shrinks.
Exactly.
Not just magically goes to X percent.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm looking at the $30,000 installation on this proposal. And it lists the general employees, 214 active, 137 employees, and 115. So do they have 214 people?
Yes, they have 187 as of right now.
So it's continuing to change and drop. We're up to 174. But we can't, all right, so that's
the police and yes, it's
at the moment.
At the moment, the general fund is closed and they have a few people left. So the software would be arguably not that potentially helpful for them. It's so where they're, instead of paying 80%, they're saying, you know, maybe we ought to split this because things have changed in the general fund. It's all they're saying.
I don't know the right place.
But Ernie's gone now, so if you can.
How much does the city use?
The city not using it at all.
Yes.
But they're willing.
Well, it sounds like somebody needs to figure out what they want to do, how they want to do it, and actually come in here and talk to us.
That's up to us. The city's not going to use the software. We are. So when I have the information, I'll bring it back to the board.
No, I didn't, as far as what you were saying about Winston being on board.
Winston was going to bring Melanin in because he understands software a little bit better than I do. She's actually had one-on-one with them, down the pony field, with them. An online, it was online, I think.
Oh, the demo?
The demo, that's what I was looking for. And we were all prepared to have that demo live in front of us, but when I found out that Foster had the software, there's more due diligence that needs to be done.
So,
yeah. It's really up to the three boards. If they want to do it, if they don't want to do it, that's fine. I don't think the city will help us implement it. But as far as who we go with and what we get,
this is
us.
This is a software program. Where's it going to be housed? Down in IT?
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be doing it. You all are the software system.
Yes.
All
right.
Backups and security, because you'll put an awful lot of employee data out there.
It's also going to be on the website, so we're going to use their portal for the website. That could be the retirees corner and everything else. Yes, they will have security.
No, we just need more information. We need to figure out from the other ones.
What have the other boards said?
I've only spoken to the general this morning. And we have two new people and one of them. So not much.
Okay.
today. We're kind of starting on square one. Tony left, Bonnie took over with two new people, and we had one that was out, so.
I think you have some changes on fire board as well.
And the cuts in.
All right.
So, since that's up here, let's have our update on proposed supplement for retirees.
So that's a resolved issue, June 7th, before City Council, with Dan Ferguson and Tony Dunn. And for council, it was, a motion was made by Mr. Wardell, seconded by Mr. Oliver, and it opened up this discussion. And Ms. Rich, led the discussion and concerns that she had about doing it. Her primary concerns, she mentioned the challenges and difficulties they had when they revamped all of the pension, police pension plan, I guess back in 16 with the last contract negotiations. And she really heavily relied upon a financial, even try to consider doing this for the police officers. What about the other two pension plans? There was some discussion about how many people you may be looking at in the general plan, and the best guess Mr. Zobler could give is maybe 90 people. And just to run my numbers again so you know, 29 people cost about $97,000. So even if you factor in those other 90 people, you're looking at about $400,000 just to play the ballpark. After Ms. Rich made her, led the discussion and made her points, Mr. Malibur withdrew his second, which kind of created some certainty that I knew that was losing some ground there. And then ultimately it was a 3-2 vote against Usley, Malibur, and Rich said no. Not that they did not, well, for the reasons that I discussed, they're just reluctant to provide an additional incentive as opposed to the plans themselves supporting themselves. So I think we're going to continue to always have that challenge until we get to the point. You know, as I looked at the numbers and kind of learned some things from this, I guess the existing benefits as a plan that we have run us at about $800,000 in cost right now. The 185 worth of money we're getting is about $584,000. So until those two pass each other in the night, I think the board, the city council board, is definitely looking for us to support our own enhancements. Probably do that. I can't imagine coming back with a counter proposal that includes potentially general and fire, knowing that the price tax may be over $400,000. But like they didn't. $97,000 didn't. The number didn't cause as much a problem as the philosophy of what it means. So, I do believe.
So they said no because we decided to try and do something for our retirees and the other boards didn't.
They do believe that if they are going to do it for one, being the one that they're cutting the check, they're going to have to do it for the others. And what is that going to mean, dollar wise? So that leaves the, you know, you try to leave some kind of organized joint effort to put forth a proposal, which is why I throw out those round numbers just running through my head of about over $400,000. It's going to be a difficult one. I'm not sure fire would come forth. I mean, fire is definitely putting forth some enhancements for their members right now, because I understand. You may have knowledge of it, and I think they've been able to provide some benefits lately.
Yes. When the plan split, they had the 8.42% contribution, and part of that contribution went towards funding a COLA, and then it's just been accumulating until 2016. is where the negotiations open at. And when it finally went through, it breaks our bag.
Right.
Like November or December is on.
Do you know what percentage was going towards this?
I do not. I'd have to look. I do know that there was over $1.2 million in the fund, in that COLA fund. And Randy worked with the actuary to come up with some design to where it's so much per year, but it's, I want to say it's less than 7%. It has to do with the assumption rate and the investment rate. Each year that is looked at, and their COLA is based on all the numbers and factors for that year.
It's a performance measure.
Yes.
Kind of like the drop-in.
Yes, whatever that 1.2 million is earning, yeah. That kind of divided up.
Yeah, I'm open if anybody has any suggestions, but I'm not really sure where to go with this thing at this point.
The general plan is on the whole, it's going to still be allowed. They're only, I think, an evaluation will be out. Last year's fundraiser was 67. It's got a little ways to go.
It's sad that they don't realize the whole of it, some of these people are in where we need to get in for their 65th birthday because of the, call my system.
That's why I think a lot of that 29 have already passed their 65th.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Hillary and Vance were both well into their 70s.
But the thing is how much they were getting versus how much they are now getting. Because the way that system worked was, I mean, we just started it, and you know, shortly after we started, it changed to what we now know. But the old way, what was it, 60%? 65% they lost? 80% they lost. So these guys went from this much to 20% of that. Yeah. And to give them that one-time little thing that would cost $97,000.
There was a 2.5 multiplier to a 1.5 multiplier. That's 80%.
I think that's a shame.
But Dan, what did that one design like the festival one?
Pardon me?
Is that like design like Social Security loan that decreases at a certain age because you're supposed to be eligible for Social Security loan?
Well, that was the thought process of the whole cities and retirement system way back.
Yeah.
But at 80%, you're not going to make up 80% with Social Security money.
Yeah, you just actually go away at age 65 until we actually enact. Because some of the numbers about this, like, you know, I know what Vance and Ellery are looking at. I can't see where that's an 80% drop in their retirement, just looking at their round, the numbers. They're well into the 20s, as to what they're getting per year. So my common sense tells me it can't be an 80% drop. Now, I think there's some of the enhancements that we're paying for right now, as I understand, they're receiving that as well.
Yes. Yeah, they took advantage of the two COLAs that we enacted, and they also were able to take advantage of the two supplements that were added.
Right.
One was a lump sum $100 a month supplement, and then we came up with $5 a month supplement. It was offset by $100.
I know when I ran some numbers, I just looked at, there were 11 members that were 25 years old that are still alive, not beneficiaries, and the range was from like $18,000 to $28,000. To what they were bringing you, which I'm going to still sit here and say that's tough to live on, which is the purpose of the proposal. But there's no doubt that they're taking the philosophy of, you know, these are the conditions that of what they have. I could not mince words in saying it is a gift. They're going to have to be okay with giving a gift. Like the member, I think, not that they said, hey, you're not making a good argument, but you know, the philosophy is what I think it is.
All right.
I'd say put it on the shelf.
Yeah, I'd say put it on the shelf.
about all you can do. I mean, there's nothing that's gonna make them buy into it at this point.
Other than, we have to get to that point of that, I believe that $800,000 will continue to come in. I mean, people are gonna pass off, or they're no longer receiving it, or, and, you know, the 185, when it catches each other and passes each other, we can begin to use the 185 money for.
The 185 money will never get, not anytime in, probably our life.
Not in our life.
It's as high as it's ever been in the 10 years I've been on the board, and it's been a lot lower than that to get back.
Has it made progressive increases over the last 10, 15 years?
Couple, over the last 10 years, it's gone up about 40,000, maybe. So I wanna say my first year was 480 something.
There've been a couple of hiccups with state money, and then it'll go back up, and you'll get less than this year than you got last year.
The other thing you gotta remember is, the state keeps a dig off of that. Again, not, you know, we get the unfunded mandates from the legislature, but then because the state money runs through Department of Revenue, they hold $50,000 a year off for processing. So everybody's got their hand in our pot, and then they mandate more expenses to us, and then they turn around and fuss about the.
Yeah, that's a good point, that was. Put a chip here, a chip there, and that's how it was funded, they didn't pull in 5%, or not, so.
Okay, I understand.
It's been a long battle, but.
Do they all know? Is somebody telling them?
I haven't, I don't have an email listing for all of them, a lot of those. Some of those individuals that are on that list, I don't even personally know. It's a little bit challenging.
I mean, I would tell one of them, because I deal with them already.
Vance and Ellery were certainly there.
I can report out to somebody.
All right. Anything, Mr. Dean?
Couple things. I'll start off with a reminder, be sure to file your financial disclosures. I'm gonna get that and hit on the board and go find the upside first. Proof that you did it. On the legislative front, we have session again, first week in March, and goes for 60 days. We've had some bills pre-filed. Two of them potentially could have an impact on us, House Bill 265, Senate Bill 248. House Bill 265 basically adds additional requirements for meeting notices and what needs to be included. I suggest we wait to discuss the details if and when it passes this session, but that's pending. And also Senate Bill 248, that made some amendments to the exemptions from the public records law, Chapter 119. And that's what we posted on those, and we'll see what else comes down the pipe. Hopefully we'll, as we have the last couple of years, escape relatively unscathed. But we'll see. I am currently drafting amendments to our ordinance and our rules and procedures for general revenue updates, foremost of which is the direction we received from the IRS on procedures we need to follow if we have a missing benefit recipient, and what we need to do to attempt to find them. And so that's going to be in the rules, each item. It is in effect now, so if we have a missing benefit recipient, let me know, and we'll be sure to follow their mandate, because it is a plan qualification matter. So, and that's it for now. We'll see what we have in mind. If there's anything we need to meet sooner for, I'll let you know, especially.
Other matters? You got nothing?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Only other thing I have is the one you kept in there. Welcome, one of the ladies of the board, for free.
Anybody got anything else?
Yeah, welcome aboard, Lynn.
All right, if no further business to discuss, I will adjourn this meeting at 2:21 PM.